Blog Talk Radio.
Of August 2016. Another fantastic day here in the garden. In paradise. 213th day of the year, but you already knew that. So the balance of the year is past us. We make the best of it or we don't. It's a choice. Even our outlook. The cup half full, cup half empty, that's a choice. World is what we determine it to be. And when we start to plunge into how we know what it is we know, we discover time and time again that whatever that it is that we call our personality and our memories do have a bearing on how we float along through the universe. Whether we have the weight of the world on our shoulders as a keen responsibility to do something to improve the lot of ourselves and our family and our mankind, or we bear the weight as a pack animal, feeling oppressed. It is, again, a matter of choice. That's the spirit of us. Particularly, we have lots of significant models, cultures who have done remarkable things from Turkey to Roman history to more recently the Irish Republic, the Irish, the Scots. Remarkable things happening. And let's not be coy here. Gentlemen, wherever you're from, Canada was appealing. It offered something to you or your ancestors, and we're all the better for it. That spirit of progress has been part of the makeup of Canada. Now, we aren't the old cultures. We don't have a culture of 4,000 or 5,000 years of China. We don't have the culture of the depth of culture of Italy or Spain or perhaps Estonia or. But we do have, when we compare, think about it. When all those other great nations of Britain, all those other nations were 160 years old, we're a heck of a lot better off today, 160 years into our process, or 170 years, or 200 years. 200 years into their development, things were not looking that great for them. Check it out. Look, let history reveal. 200 years, we're not even at 200 years yet, and we're striving. We're pulling hard on the oar. We have goals. We have a future. And we make mistakes, yes, and we learn from them. And sometimes we repeat those mistakes because we're not that willing to be rash about our country. So we're a country that moves gradually. And we like that because it gives us some element of familiarity and predictability. There are only, 36, a little more than 36 million of us. We're getting there. That country is, look at it. It's an opportunity for the future. Our provinces are empty. Yeah, we're clamoring and taking up all the good land, and you know, bless him for saying it. My grandfather never could understand why Ontario paved over some of the best farmland in the country. And we still do that. We haven't quite figured that out yet. But the best farmland is the most temperate and comfortable, and we can grow things. And so we put our highways and buildings and the sprawl around the cities. Well, you know, we can notice the price we pay, but if we're just sitting down with our thin-lipped and quivering about all of this, let's balance it off, gentlemen. Get a spine. We have to be convinced that those prices that we're paying for our progress are worth it. Otherwise, we're part of this withering narrative that does nothing to add, or nothing to contribute except to slow us down, to be a drag. But that's the future, that's this country, and that's your place in it. Thank you. We're doing something really well. And yet now, I like to think that it's accurate enough. We don't act like that gong show that's going on south of us. That's really kind of scary when you think. The world, it's got the world's attention. People running around with that afraid, armed, you know. And you know that people, as we age, the human spirit seems to become more timid as we age, more fearful of things. And yet the risk doesn't change. It's our perception that changes. People, as they age, tend to see demons in danger where before it was just commonplace. Look at the courage of our young people if we want to find that check and balance. They're still willing to pick up arms and to go off and fight for a cause and principle. They're still willing to step out into the night because they'll see their friends and to enjoy a different perspective on the world. The world changes at night, doesn't it? We have a good program today, and we're talking directly about novelty and distraction. Now, I want to just start this off with a little bit of music here to help whet the appetite. All of you, sit back in your most comfortable chair. Get a mug of your favorite Kool-Aid, and sit back and join me, and we'll see if we can't find something entertaining to contribute to the process. Huh? This is a little Terrence Blanchard. A little smooth way to ease into the day. See what you think. Thank you. from a live studio session, if you can believe that. We'll come back to a little bit of it. Just gets you into, a really interesting space. And I'm betting for most of us that's not the music our mothers fed to us when we were little. That's the cool, the understated groove. Jazz seems to be a universal language, which is why it's the course of the theme. It fits so well with Masonic effects. And there's a lot. This is putting some meat on the bone, not just talking about universality as if it's an alien idea. We talk about applications of that idea itself. How do we bring that about? It's not our great organizations. It's us that makes that happen. Now, I want to talk with you today, an interesting novel, a narrative today. When you think about what it is, Freemasonry, or what it is Masonry, I hope that I can bounce a few ideas off you. Make up your own mind about what you think is most appropriate, but at least consider something a little more in depth than a slogan off of a bumper sticker, make a good man better with no explanation or thought. Lately, my thinking has been drawn to something obvious. Sometimes you just open your eyes a little wide and you see things right in front of us and never acknowledged them before. One of those things is this search. Freemasonry is a search, and I'm going to try and demonstrate that a little bit to you. It's not just a search or that nebulous journey, blah, blah, blah. And this is a journey. It's a search for experience. Yeah. Experience. Give me a second to collect your thoughts. Help us collect our thoughts on this. The question that pushes me toward that understanding, what would compel us? We start to look at all the history of Masonry that's grown. Well, we have always grown. We have always been our collective intellect, that body of knowledge has always been growing. As the people, as the cultures have morphed and grown, even writing it down, trying to be as orthodox as possible, the context of the orthodoxy has changed constantly. So we see in the scheme of life here, what are we, 189 countries? Is that where we are? In the scheme of life, we see small islands of effort to freeze time, to preserve something from the past. And we see that in some faith-based organizations. Not of that. We see a clamor to enjoy the victories of battles that were lost, as if it transforms our current cities and towns, the citizens, into some type of hero. And we'll see people seem to react very strongly to somebody that wants to berate them for losing a battle long, long gone. It's a shame, really. When people do that, they're fighting old, they're tilting at windmills, they're fighting and I'm making an issue out of something that no longer exists except in the memory. Oh my goodness, we have to wipe out that memory. Well, we're never going to do that. You know, you and I know that. People believe what they want to believe, what they choose to believe. Even our ability to sway opinion. You know, the research is showing us, science is showing us that injecting fact, injecting evidence into an illogical conversation. Somebody might have a fabricated belief based on superstition. A good one, vaccinating your children leads to autism. Remember when that quack, some quack researcher a few years ago made that claim, and it completely fault. You know, he's just pulling that out of thin air, like a reality show host. And yet a lot of people clung to the idea. Probably there's something else going on behind that. Nobody likes to see their baby have a needle and cry. You know, it is temporarily painful, but it's better than the alternative. Our children getting measles and developing deformities. But are all parents able to handle that responsibility? Answer that one for yourself. But you see, the notion of putting in those facts and explaining the science to that group of people, you know, their children go to school vulnerable to these viruses that ordinarily we think we can stamp them out. In some areas of Africa, polio started to surface again. You know, viruses that can be controlled, it's been demonstrated. But superstition is very strong. And trying to balance off superstition with fact, we now know we have a suspicion that in some cases makes the holders of those superstitions even more entrenched, makes things worse. So how do we, in a sense, how do we change a person's opinion? Well, it seems that we don't. Putting a thoughtless man into the regalia, it doesn't make him a mason. It dresses him up as one. But he himself has to allow the process to occur. Only he can let the ideas of Freemasonry excite him enough to take the time to do the work, to open your mind and begin to make changes in your focus. And it's not the easy changes. We mustn't trivialize Masonry. It's not the easy changes. It's the most difficult. When we're able to face the growth that comes around our most entrenched, narrow-minded aspects of life, when we experience that strain, and we experience it all by ourselves, those are the fundamental changes that Freemasonry is built to achieve. How do you know that, Dale? You don't know very much. Of course I don't know very much. I'm clueless about most things, but I do know when we go through history, and you're going to say, oh my goodness, man, you've already talked with us about how history can be revised, but you make the call. How do you explain our fascination with some very strange ideas over years? And I say strange in the most naughty sense of the word, some very strange ideas. Ideas that really pushed reason. Why would a group of very intelligent, not entirely, we had some dead wood there, come on, there's some stumps in the woods, but the corpus, enlightened mind, maybe it's only one in every two, maybe it's one in every 100, I don't know, but that the group are able to read and think and reason and develop ideas that aren't the ideas that were told to them by someone else. In other words, that mental maturity. And if it gets your back up and it reinforces racism or some type of divisiveness, give your head a shake. What philosophy of the world, what true philosophy of the world advocates that kind of nonsense? That's more doctrinaire kind of thinking. We see it played out even today. Despots and demagogues. The world is going to hell, and I'm the only one that can save you. Our world has gone to hell, and it's because of those people that aren't like us. You know, that kind of tripe? It's very damaging, but it plays to weaknesses. And the great creator knows we all have those. But it brings out the worst of our character, the worst of our collective culture, our cultures and our character, to play to those weaknesses. What culture needs to admit and perform a display of its weakness? Isn't it the point that we do everything in our power to overcome those things? That we create a world that makes things better for the next generation, and we try and launch our children with ideas that are going to help them survive in the decades that are coming ahead. Not our lifestyle. Those are decades behind. Preparing a child to live in 1950, oh my goodness. What's he going to drive, a 1950 Buick? No power steering, no power brake. Do you remember those tanks? Anybody out there that remember? Oh, the 3-speed on the column. There was a beauty. There was a beauty. And before bias ply tires, do you remember those great big boils that would come on the side of that and a blowout in the highway when Dad's cruising down the road at a bleak 45 or 50 miles an hour? Oh, you're happy, though. Gas was what? 20 cents a gallon? Yeah, was that? Yeah. You could get a pack of smokes for what, 15 cents? Ah, good times, eh? We're killing ourselves. Good times. That ignorance is bliss. Ah, that's the way to live. Except it didn't work for you and I or any of our kind. So the mason in the man needed challenge. Constant. They experience. Give me that je ne sais quoi. Something that's going to be that lever, that catalyst that's going to help me to change my focus, to learn. Well, the first thing, you're aware that, are you aware? And being aware is like acknowledging, other people see the world differently than I do. And then usually we would question, what in the world does that mean? And what are the implications of that? If every single person sees the world uniquely to them, then how in the world do we ever work collectively? Now that's one of the magical bits that we still strive to understand. It's reasoning. It's persuasion. It's rhetoric. Remember the work in the history of Freemasonry, we learn these things. Well, today we don't teach our boys and girls rhetoric. We don't. And the art of persuasion, that's left for private schools here in North America more than anything. Then business schools and, The appetite for new experience drove us to explore. Well, we look at different symbols and we're looking for essential answers to phenomenal issues, the primary issues, the primary question of existence. When I heard that, the first reaction I had was, that is speaking in tongues. That's Babylon. That kind of question is far too lofty for the simple likes of me. I'm a farmer's kid. Grandfather was a farmer. Other grandfather was a blacksmith. And before that, fishermen and farmers and blacksmiths, and they tilled the land, they cut the trees, they caught the fish, they fished for oyster and lobster and grew their cattle and pigs and chickens and whatever. Simple folk, very aware of the environment. If it didn't rain, the crops suffered. If it rained too much, the crops suffered. So what do you do when you want to try and influence it as much as you can? You need that extra couple of days just to get the crops off the field. What do? You pray. Oh, my goodness. Hey, what the hell? Might work. Might help. You hope. You strive. And you do whatever you can. You work long into the night if you have to, if you know the storm is coming. Always racing against time and being subject of the elements around us. Nature. We're not divorced from that kind of thinking, you and I. But still, we had that search. Well, if we were... When we get become mature enough to realize that it's okay for each one of us to wonder about those primary and essential questions, it's perfectly okay, even if we're shy. Maybe you and I were fortunate enough to be brought up and to be touched and influenced by people that could guide us and help us to feel the confidence intellectually to be able to embrace those great ideas. And perhaps we were fortunate enough to have a mentor or somebody around us that would say, even though we did not see our own ability, that if you, that made us believe that if we worked hard, if we studied hard, we could achieve great things. And not many of us had those kind of mentors. We become those mentors for other people. Not because we're smug and we're clever, unless you're a narcissist or your ego is so fragile that's what you feed on. It's all me, I'm wonderful, and the sun shines out of every orifice. You've worked for those. You've been around those kind of louts. No. This is where the mentor that carries on their influence with humility. So remember the question I'm asking you, yeah, can you embrace that? Do you have that mentoring? And I hope you do. And can you shyly creep up on those big, big questions and begin to explore what in the world they mean to you and I? Why is it important for us to ask those questions? What does it mean? Do that do that at your own pace, of course. You can be completely shy and you can be completely overwhelmed because, oh my goodness, that's a truth. There are some things out there in the universe that we just don't understand. And there are some things out there that are bigger than you and I. A little bit of a blow to the human ego, is it? Well, I don't know why our brain developed a mind. I don't know. I haven't a clue. But it did. And we benefit from it. And it's there to use. Now, if you want to explore the potential and the power of that, what's hanging in between your ears, you're going to have to kick it up a gear or two. Or if you're one of those rare creatures, or three. Oh, turn the radio up here. I have to whisper this to you. No, it's a secret. Yeah, we want to keep our secrets to ourselves. We're clever boys. Let's keep our secrets. We don't want any of the good ideas getting out there with the riffraff. No. We want to keep them all to our house, to the chosen few. Makes you feel all warm and fuzzy, doesn't it? We can tackle these remarkably difficult challenges, but we require patience, and it requires a thoughtful mind. You can be wild in the streets all the time, I'll give you an example, and this is, I think, a fine example. There was a rock and roll band back in the day called Queen, and the orchestrations were incredibly complicated. These were musicologists putting music together. You may not have liked the music at all. You may not have liked the period of music. It's neither here nor there. It's just coincidental to the story. There was a guitarist in that group called Brian May. Now, Dr. May is an astrophysicist. He's also the president of the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. While in his day, where do we pigeonhole that kind of talent? That's just a popular name that comes to mind as illustration. We see these kinds of talents around us constantly that change the narrative, that change the definitions. Just when you think you've figured out the enemy, he goes and does something really generous and nice, and he's not the enemy. Oh, my goodness, we're seeing that challenge with homophobia these days. Oh, my goodness, the clamor. What's happening, though, is people are realizing, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, you take away the fear factor, what do you got? You take away the baggage, and what do you got? Interesting, isn't it? Just fascinating. Oh, and the balance of equal gender equality? What's happening with that? Well, we know the only way the world continues to rotate on its axis is if we maintain this imbalance. We will need to suppress the one gender. That's the way it works, baby. That's the way we need to keep it going. So let's suppress them. That's the group that has to work twice as hard to get ahead, and we're not going to have to pay them equal because of their gender, right? Can you imagine? How does it sound? How does it sound for grown men? Get back up on our hind legs and yell and holler and make ourselves seem foolish? Yeah, you keep doing that, and then you ask yourself, how Masonic is that? How Masonic is it? Unpleasant, naughty little questions to ask? Yeah. But let's keep it all pleasant and between the ditches, eh? Why then, if we're not a curious lot, do we keep going to these esoteric topics? Here's an example. It's just history, eh? Lots of it. And I think it's a beautiful history. It's compelling. And this is about Hermetic masonry in Europe. Yeah. As marriages go, the relationships, the many relationships between masonry and Rosicrucianism in the 18th century seems positively incestuous. It's frequently impossible to tell where masonry begins and the Rosicrucianism ends. For many of those people we have encountered, their relationship was less of a marriage than a complete fusion. The fusion, of course, and the Rosicrucians that are out there listening to this, I'm singing to the choir here with this. The fusion did create a different conception of Rosicrucianism to that envisioned by the creator of the original mythology, Johann Valentin Andrea, in the early 17th century, talking 1600s here. Let's distinguish high-grade from low-grade masonry, eh? The true from the pretenders, or the, you know, people standing, the participants from the spectators. High-grade Freemasonry was also a very different conception of the craft to that envisioned by the members of those lodges that started this governance structure back, you know, pre-1717. They weren't thinking about, you know, the outrageousness of having to change your sense of logic to grasp the alchemical process. That wasn't part of their agenda at the time. Nevertheless, the basic ideas struck chords with the creative imaginations of many people who felt, for a variety of reasons, that the wicked world was running away with them, and that humankind needed more than ordinary intelligence to avoid being swallowed up by the chaos. I want to be on the ark. I don't want to be in the ocean with all those sinners. The opening chord soon became a full-blown symphony. And while it may have generated not a little misguided frenzy and some peculiar tunelessness, this marriage nevertheless produced some rather extraordinary children. These were, as the alchemists would put it, philosophical children who would go on to promote some extraordinary movements. Among these movements, we can name the French occult revival with its impact on art and esoteric philosophy and the combination of the two. Stemming in part from France, we have the revival of Hermetic studies in the late 19th century, London, that coalesces in the ill-fated Order of the Golden Dawn, with all its literary, philosophical, and artistic influences. The explosion of theosophy from 1875 has been very influential on many strains of culture, perhaps most notably upon the still thriving anthroposophy movement of Rudolf Steiner. Anthroposophy. Google that, aren't you? The descendants of the fecund marriage also account for much early 20th century social experimentation. The openness of Indian and Chinese philosophies that we now take for granted. We've also made some moves towards some social and religious toleration. Did you get that? Social? Religious toleration? Oh, we have miles to go on that journey. We should not forget Sir Stephen Runciman's words, tolerance is a social, not a religious virtue. Gulp. Perhaps the greatest art is charity, for it enables so many to see, oh, those dirty little unworthy people. Why should I give what I've worked so hard to amass? Why? Maybe that's the essential hypocrisy. I wonder if that's one of the questions we need to ask or admit that exists, that we sometimes act very ignorant and that sometimes we have to control our own hypocrisy, our own conceit. And it has enabled so much art and constructive activity, much of it unseen by those who consider themselves self-made. Oh, I did it my way. It's me, the I generation. Eh? The philosophical children have been responsible for much charity and imaginative stimulus undertaken and generated by any number of the various Masonic and Masonic influence movements active in the freer world. This, and I hope you can all stand and applaud this, this is a timely moment to explore a little of some of the activities of Masonic groups around the world today, groups that should not have existed without much that we have related in our thinking and in our history. And the legacy lives on. The beauty, the legacy moves on. Now just chew on that one for just a little bit. Okay? Just a little bit. Here's something, little ear candy, before I get into the narrative, the commentary today. This is Billie Holiday. Cup half full. See this as a wonderful, miraculous story. Cup half empty crowd. See this as disgrace. You decide. She's singing Ain't Misbehaving. Ain't
talk with all by myself. No one to walk with, but I'm happy on the shelf. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you. I know for certain the one I love. I'm through with Satan, it's just you I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you. Like Jack Horner in a corner, don't go nowhere, what do I care? Your kiss is always waiting for. Believe me, I don't stay out late, don't care to go. I'm home about it, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.
Is she timeless? Yeah, I don't know. So, these are the challenges we face. If your tendency is just to think that being rigid is a good way, some form of protection, I think if you look out the window, you'll see that the seasons are changing, and so have you over the years. Even if you're espousing this You're mouthing the same words that your ancestors did. They face the same challenge. How do we move forward? Well, if you think about it, if they had kept thinking within the box, they would never have progressed. So I want to talk here, bring your attention to novelty and distraction. And I think this is you guys, you, us, people searching for experience. Little needs to be added that will compel a man to study the lessons within masonry. What compels? If you do it of your own volition or you don't. Easy to point a finger. No single aspect captures its beauty. No idea exists that separates masonry from great ideas of humanity. Is there a difference? A group of curious-minded men gather in the 13th century. They talk. They find, not surprisingly, a bond exists, a means of connecting one with another. Familiarity becomes the basis of a profound trust sufficient to make statements of agreed fact that publicly were perhaps blasphemous. What they discovered was a means to speculate in safety in a world ready to judge and condemn, only to see where it led. Literate men commenting on culture, law, faith, knowledge. Risk takers by convention, conservatives by nature. Men who were able to admit their own ignorance at the threshold of brilliance. These men knew that the future would be forged by great minds and great ideas, always changing, always in motion. That is the extension, the exception that you and I agreed to when we became a Mason. I think. How does it fit with your sense of the world around us? Never do I claim that this is going to make sense. Never, never, never. But the more we begin to understand, it's not that we study something because it's, we have that sense of people that will study something because it makes them seem, they want to seem a little more clever than they really are. I think that's all right. If you're faking it and you're working your tail off and you accomplish great things that benefits mankind, I'm thinking, good on you. Does it really matter to me whether you're true to your beliefs or not? Not really. I want to know what you're doing when your brain's in its spare time, when you're coming up with creative ideas. So let's put a group of people that are fearful of change in a room together where they can bounce those ideas off. We have to stay the same. We cannot possibly change. And that group can actually convince itself and the members of that group that moving forward and acknowledging the future, living in the moment, is a threat. They can actually convince themselves that everything around is in a time capsule, and we cannot, that time capsule is maybe moving through the universe at an accelerated pace, but as long as we stay inside of it, and as long as our rhetoric remains pretty mundane and encourages the same mentality, then as we sit there and watch this bubble moving around, orbiting around us, what do we think? What do you think of the men trapped in that bubble? What do you think? And in fact, there may be other similar bubbles within our Masonic universe. And they're all orbiting around, and they're all saying basically the same thing. We're so uncertain of ourselves, we don't know if we can try something that redefines the order, because we don't know if we can withstand the criticism. Oh, and in the meantime, unless we can do things without criticism, we ought not to act. Well, come on now. So collectively, can we withstand the criticism? I'm inclined to think, can we exist if we don't? Our early beginnings were not, well, let's say there was a bit, I hope, of a strategy behind it. Our inclusion of the power brokers of the day made perfect sense because it began to answer questions. It helped to answer some questions to legitimate the order. That was important, the legitimacy, and that was furthered by the development of constitution. That was a certain way of establishing the credibility and the stability of these enormous organizations. In the day, it created a legitimacy. So, there you have it, gentlemen. Where do you fit in that? The novelty and distraction is there to meet the appetite that's constant. And we may be fascinated. Things old may be new again. Even in the day, did this entire body understand the marriage between Masonry and Rosicrucianism? Probably not. Or the notions between the questions about the coexistence of various cultures, ethnic groups, and religions being embraced by the concepts of the philosophy of Masonry. Well, it's just like we may have a great idea, but we need to sit down with the artificers. We need to sit down with people that have the wherewithal, the experience, and the skills to help make those ideas into reality, to make things work. So who are the people that we remember? Somebody that came up with the original idea, or the artificers? You, my friend, are the artificer. You, my friend, are the person that brings these disparate ideas together in a coherent way. The challenge is the constraint of Masonic philosophy. Anybody can do this if you're just a little free-floating spirit out there, part of that free-floating spirit world. Damn hippies. You're all hippies once. Yeah, y'all were boys. Y'all did foolish things and had foolish thoughts. So, am I impressed with your serious sternness today? Not very much, you phony old fucker. You've forgotten that part of you, huh? Forgotten how to react emotionally to music or a play or a book or to make the best of your situation? Well, boo-hoo. You do that and you... Who is it that said? Was that Oscar Wilde? You cry alone. You laugh, laugh, we will laugh with you. You cry alone. Is that Shaw? Anyway, I'm going to get out of here for the day. I'm going to leave you with a little bit of John Coltrane. And maybe if you're around, we'll play a little Charles Mingus. You see the things that brings the common language... After Babylon, we all went our way. You know, we were just naughty groups, and we were having a great time, but, you know, it wasn't fitting the orthodoxy. So we have this story about the tower being broken down and everybody being scattered over the earth, speaking different languages. Oh, there, you know, that got it. That got us. You know, that taught us a lesson. That really, that was the kind of leadership that we really crave. You know, we need more of that in the world. So what that tells us is that some knucklehead thought, well, let's create some clear divisions and that'll make things better. You know, we'll get even, that's a punishment. So anybody that speaks different and acts different and worships differently and dresses differently is somehow part of that punishment. Well, don't you know, it's in scripture. Oh my goodness, that's the translation. That's the interpretation that we're working with, baby. And don't you be asking any questions about it. And if you start to ask questions about that, and you ask, was that translation always in place? You uppity little thing, you're going to find that it wasn't always in place. And when you find, you start to get really pushy and you ask about the original source material and what was going on in the time to help us to understand the original intent. It's sort of like Second Amendment. You know, we knew that Second Amendment, we knew the American Constitution was thinking about Glocks and AK-47s when they wrote it back in the day in the 18th century. Yeah, of course. Sometimes we're a bit absurd, we human beings, aren't we? So it's been a pleasure today. Thank you. I think your appetite is going to move us forward. Don't be distracted by our membership numbers. We've got some, that's teaching us about some things that we haven't done well that we need to improve. That's sort of like a big recall. We're recalling a lot of ideas because they weren't really well prepared in the first place and they didn't really do the job. So we have to go back to our architects and engineers and philosophers and try and come up with something better. Well, it's right in front. We're at that threshold. Very, very interesting times. The task that we have to figure out is how to get these ideas out there, outside the lodge, when we're veiled in this, you know, strange sense of privacy. Secrecy. No, excuse me. Secrecy. It's not the privacy. Goodness gracious, we need that privacy. But this notion of secrecy, how are we going to get that idea out there? By, you know, assuming that the world hasn't moved since the 40s and 50s. Well, boys and girls, Masons who have all stripes, we're no longer a rural nation. We're a nation of many colors and many languages, and we're new at it, and we're pretty good at this. And we need Masonry today more than ever. So I'll leave you with a little Coltrane, something to think about. I'll look forward to hearing your arguments and petitions and beefs and hopefully maybe an agreement, the odd agreement there. Maybe if we stimulated a bit of the raw nerve that needs that in you, that's great. Thanks for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Mm-hmm. This is a little Coltrane called Equinox, and it's a beauty. I'll talk to you again soon. Commit those acts of Masonic kindness. A little air of Rio, as in Olympics. Bye.